The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We are off and running on yet another week of broadcasting on KPCG or KPCG.fm. If you happen to listen online, you can send your emails to the show as well at td@kpcg.fm. On today's program, we've got some exciting statistics to pass along. I'll get to those here in just a second. And also more on how the world is responding to Donald Trump's stunning victory last Tuesday in the United States presidential election. We'll go through that. We've had a lot to say on it already, the Trumpet Hour in particular, Friday's broadcast, and also an article we posted at thetrumpet.com just yesterday. We'll also look at, give you a few excerpts from Donald Trump's interview on 60 Minutes last night that played in America Sunday evening. I think it was recorded on Friday. In any event, toward the end of the show, we'll play a few statements from that exchange that stood out to me. And then also, I'd like to hit a few high spots from my father's new booklet, Great Again, the follow-up booklet to America Under Attack. We'll look at that in just a bit as well. But first, some stats. This from our producer, Sam Livingston, who pointed out there's quite a, as you might expect, there was quite a boost in listenership last week after the election. You can see the figures if you just look at the plays on SoundCloud. Wednesday's program, the day we talked about the election from the night before, there's over 1,800 plays on that one already. And then the day after that, not that far behind, the hysterical anti-Trump reaction was the title, and where this is leading. There's close to 1,700 plays for that one. And then Friday's on the news media, how the political press has responded not only to Trump's election, but to the rioting and the protesting that followed that election. That's upwards of 1,200, almost 1,300 plays on SoundCloud. Now, what's interesting, too, from last week is the people listening in to the live stream. I think we had the most we've had just listening directly to kpcg.fm or the trumpet.com website, all totaled last Wednesday morning in Oklahoma at 7 a.m. or whatever the time was, wherever you happen to live. But we had 238 people listening live to the live stream on one of our two websites. And as Sam noted just the other day, there's quite a few people. Well, there's a lot of other ways that you can listen to the program live. You can tune in through the TuneIn app, which has 761 followers now, or Stitcher. And I think there's maybe another way or perhaps two other ways that you can listen to the program live, and that's online. We don't know. It's hard to gauge how many people actually listen to the broadcast over the air there in North Edmond or around the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus. In any event, it looks like there were several hundred that listened to the program live last Wednesday, and about at least 150 or maybe more that listened the following day. There was also a huge uptick in the podcast downloads through iTunes and, again, other means. We've been reporting in recent weeks that, generally speaking, we've got 200 or so people that download the podcasts. And all through last week, the average was more like 500. So, and including the two programs before the U.S. election, the one last Monday and last Tuesday. So a nice increase on those podcast downloads, people that just have it downloaded to their podcast app on their iPhone or whatever, and that listen to the program later. So we had at least three programs, just again with conservative estimates across the board, that had well over 2,000 people listening in last week, or at least 2,000 plays. Who knows how many are listening in each of those homes where those plays are taking place. So those are some pretty exciting stats. The trend is, of course, heading in the right direction, upward. As far as regions go, the U.S. leads in all categories, followed by Canada in the second place. So the number of people, we're basing this on the SoundCloud stats in particular. And then after Canada, Australia comes in third. And then fourth place generally alternates between Philippines and the United Kingdom here in the U.K. So it just depends from day to day. They seem to be running neck and neck, these two nations, the U.K. and Philippines. So I thought you'd be interested to get some behind-the-scenes statistics from this very program. Well, the world's reaction to Donald Trump's shocking victory, as I said, this was fleshed out on Trumpet Hour on Friday's broadcast, where the panelists were talking about, Richard Palmer in particular there with Joel Hilliker, the host, talking about how so many leaders in Europe are just shocked and appalled that that Donald Trump would be elected as president of the United States. And what will this mean for Europe's future? What will it mean for NATO, for Europe's defense? What will it mean for free trade? What does it mean for U.S.-European relations overall? Richard Palmer was noting on Friday's show the conditional cooperation that German Chancellor Angela Merkel offered following Trump's election. She listed all of these values, you know, democracy, freedom, respect for law and for human dignity, she said. And she said, on the basis of these values, I offer the future president of the United States of America, Donald Trump, close cooperation. So as long as he has the same values as we do in Germany, then, well, I'll offer my support. I mean, when have you seen this? A world leader offering conditional support to the newly elected president-elect of the United States of America. That's astounding to me. It's pretty incredible. That quote, by the way, is included in that piece we posted at thetrumpet.com yesterday, the written piece, how Europe is responding to the Trump victory. On the whole, they're not responding very well. This is not a good response. This is not a good reaction, looking at it from Trump's perspective. At least not when he looks at Europe. When he looks over at Russia, of course, Vladimir Putin, he's ecstatic. And same with the leaders in China. They know that without the U.S. as world policemen, they have free rein. They can do as they please. They can expand their kingdoms. The Financial Times, it says the danger to the international security system is as great. Russia and China have emerged in the past decades as leading authoritarian great powers, both of whom have territorial ambitions. They have territorial ambitions, it says. Trump's position on Russia is particularly troubling. He's never uttered a critical word about Putin and has suggested that his takeover of Crimea was perhaps justified. That's the Financial Times talking about. And you saw this a lot in the news leading up to the election. I mean, he's never uttered a critical word about Putin. And he suggested that, well, he can have Crimea. Why should we bother? Why should we worry about it? It says here the first victim of any Trumpist attempt to get along better with Russia will be Ukraine and Georgia, two countries that have relied on U.S. support to retain their independence as struggling democracies. How many nations in the world today that have traditionally relied upon U.S. support, that have traditionally relied upon U.S. protection? How many of those nations are panicking right now? Or maybe to ask it from the other direction, are there any nations that have relied on U.S. support that are cheering right now? maybe Israel, and we'll get to that in a moment. But besides Israel, who else? Who else is applauding this? Of the traditional American allies, who else is out there saying, this is great, the world's going to be more secure. They're going to look after our interests more with Donald Trump at the helm. They're panicking. They're panicking, so many of them. And really, Israel should be too. Now, again, when they look back over the last 8 years, they're comparing it to President Obama, which has just been so antagonistic toward the little Jewish state. And you can imagine, I mean, you can see why a lot of Israelis today, why they're celebrating, thinking that, well, it surely can't be any worse than what it once was. And at least judging by his statements, Mr. Trump seems pro-Israel. But at the same time, I mean, listen to him and listen to what he says about all those unnecessary wars in the Middle East and the trillions of dollars that the United States has spent there, and how that money could be better spent at home. That's the policy. That's the Trump doctrine, as far as we know it to be right now. America first. America comes first. Let the Middle East fend for itself. Let Russia take over. Why should we worry about Eastern Europe? Well, then you know about what's happening internally. I mean, speaking of prophecies that are accelerating, and we talked a lot about this on this particular program last week, what's happening within the United States and how that this is exposing this sharp division between the populist movement and the radical left. It's exposing a sharp racial divide as well. It's really just throwing fuel on that fire that's been lit by President Obama and his administration. Look at what Spiegel had to say about last week's election. It says 60 million Americans acted stupidly. They cast their votes for xenophobia, racism, and nationalism, the end of equal rights and social conscience. Spiegel here is taking its cue from the left-wing media in the United States. That 60 million of them are stupid. They're racist. They're bigots. They voted for the end of climate treaties and health insurance. 60 million people followed a demagogue who will do little for them. And then Spiegel goes on to say that this election was about the country's, America's white majority seeking to protect its identity. And as I said last week, the statistics don't support this theory. That's all that it is. You look at the facts and the figures. You look at the number of whites that voted for Trump or Romney or Obama. It doesn't fit with this narrative. And yet you can see how strong the support is for this argument. And you can see also how it's just stirring up further strife and division. Coming back to, again, the world's response, notice what the Globe and Mail had to say. It says, the phrase leader of the free world is usually applied to the President of the United States and rarely without irony. I'm tempted to say that the leader of the free world is now Angela Merkel. It's no longer the United States. That's quite a statement. I mean, obviously, maybe he's trying to be dramatic for effect. But here again, when you understand the prophecies of God, do you think the nations of this world, particularly in Europe, are going to respond to this election from last week by looking to the United States more or less? And if it's less, is that significant? Well, what do the prophecies say? The prophecies say there's to be one final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. That is not going to be an empire that is dependent upon the United States of America for its safety and security. That's an empire. We have to tell you, that's an empire that's going to actually attack the United States. That's what your Bible says. That's what Herbert Armstrong was saying for 7 decades. And here we are, as an extension of his work. God says the ruins of that work have been raised. And you're hearing the same message that went out for 7 decades. 8 or 9 almost. If you go back to the early years of his conversion and ministry, what a strong message. And every day we're seeing how true it was from the very beginning. That's because it's based on the sure word of Bible prophecy. I think the leader of the free world now is Angela Merkel, this particular opinion piece says. That's from the Globe and Mail. I think that's in Canada. Here's the New York Times. This is from the Sunday edition, yesterday's newspaper. The New York Times says Donald Trump's election leaves Angela Merkel as the liberal West's last defender. Now the world looks to Mrs. Merkel. The Times says here Germany's chancellor, Angela Merkel, has emerged as the last powerful defender of Europe and the transatlantic alliance after the election of Donald J. Trump. Now look, as I said last week, the New York Times gets a lot of things wrong, but on this it's right. Again, because when you base it on what Donald Trump has been saying, Europe, you've got to fend for yourself. You've got the money. You've got the power. You've got the leadership. Why should we go in debt trying to protect you? And so a new world is taking shape, a new world order, I should say. It says after 11 years in power, well, again, backing up, this is the New York Times on Angela Merkel. In response to the election of Donald J. Trump, she's the last powerful defender. And then the Times says, but after 11 years in power, she is tired, her associates say, and under siege, seemingly, from all directions. How much longer is Angela Merkel going to last in that office? A change in leadership is coming to Germany, too. I mean, they've got elections next year. Look at what's happened just in recent months. Brexit in June, Donald Trump in November. Germany has an election next year. Are you ready for all of these events? Prophecy is accelerating. It surely is. The Times piece quotes Simon Tilford here, director of some think tank in Europe. He says, never before has so much ridden on the Germans. Never before. I mean, Germany's the de facto leader in Europe. Everything's riding on Germany now. The United States is going its own way. And soon, America's going to have so many problems spilling into the streets that Donald Trump and the United States, I mean, they're not going to have any choice but to turn inward. But that's already the direction. I mean, that's the signal that he sent. No longer the world policeman. Hooray for that, says Russia and China. And Europe is panicking. Well, but since the 1940s, you've rebuilt the continent. You've ensured our protection. You've policed the world. All of that is changing, and it's dramatically. It's happening dramatically fast. It says here, an increasingly divided Europe is looking to Germany, its richest power, to cope with its many problems. Some of them long-standing, low growth, a continuing stream of refugees, and increasingly angry and nationalistic electorates. It's amazing that the Times can see these problems and see what it's doing to the populace in Europe. It couldn't see it in America. Remember last week, after the election, Democrats and students and world leaders are trying to come to grips with the fact that Trump is in charge. They were clueless in the lead up to the election about the stream of refugees, about the low growth in the American economy, about the increasingly angry and nationalistic electorates. I mean, they see that in Europe. They see where this might be leading in Europe. New leadership, do you suppose? Because Angela Merkel is tired. She's tired. 11 years she's been in office. It's as if when the New York Times reports on the United States that it puts on, well, these blinders. Further on, it says Italy and Spain are politically fragile. Austria might elect a hard right president next month. And Miss Merkel faces difficult negotiations with Britain over its so-called Brexit. Lots of trouble in Europe. Lots of trouble. The whole continent's looking to Germany. And Angela Merkel is tired, her associates say. And she's under siege, seemingly from every direction. The Times says, and with Mr. Trump advocating America first and questioning the value of the NATO alliance, there's pressure on Germany to take a greater role in European security. Always, listen to this, always a delicate matter. Even the New York Times. You're going to give Germany a greater role in European security? Even the New York Times says, listen, that's a delicate matter. Are you sure that's the direction you want to go in? Are you sure, Mr. Trump? Turn it over to Germany? Let Germany take on a greater role in European security? Is that what you intend to do? Well, further on in this piece, it talked about the election last week happening on November 8th and reported on here in Europe on November 9th. It says, on a fateful day when Germans are usually preoccupied with remembering Kristallnacht, the Nazis' pogroms against Jews on November 9th, 1938, and the joyous fall of the Berlin Wall on November 9th, 1989, Miss Merkel offered Mr. Trump her close cooperation, but named a price. We reported on this at the Trumpet. Richard Palmer talked about it Friday. We'll cooperate. But on these conditions, you better have a respect for human dignity and for minorities. The Times says Miss Merkel had a brisk, assertive tone that was a measure of how far Germany has come since American generosity and protection enabled it to rise from Nazi defeat. First to prosper. And eventually to overcome Cold War division. The United States made all of this possible. The United States brought this about. And now you have Germany standing up in response to this election and saying, well, we'll cooperate as long as you behave, as long as you adhere to these rules, this respect for human dignity. It really is stunning to just see these things happening in the world today. Who could have imagined this even 10, 15, or 20 years ago? Now it's happening. It says here, it was stunning how she publicly laid out the rules for Trump, congratulating him, but laying down conditions. This is the leader of Germany saying this to the newly elected president of the United States. And then finally, it says here, Eugenia's Smoller of the Center of International Relations in Warsaw said that Europeans need a shock, and that Mr. Trump's election is one which might be very helpful to concentrate their beautiful minds. After decades of lip service, Mr. Smoller said, Europeans may, for instance, finally pool arms production or indeed strengthen and expand the Eurozone. After decades of just talking about it, they might finally strengthen the Union and pool their arms production together. Well, how could this possibly be significant from a prophetic standpoint? This is exactly what the Bible says will happen. It's no longer talk. It's happening. It's happening. Over at the Wall Street Journal, it says that for the second time in less than 5 months, European leaders have woken up to a vote that has shaken the continent's geopolitical order. The second time in 5 months. That's how fast these events are now unfolding. Britain is on the way out. They voted that in June. And Herbert Armstrong prophesied that decades ago. And now in 5 months later, You have the election of this American first populist. Says, if anything, the election of Donald Trump was more shattering than Britain's decision to leave the European Union. Europe is being jolted. Listen to this. Europe is being jolted by this, by these developments. Says, the votes of two of the world's most open and market-oriented economies both suggested dissatisfaction in globalization and economic integration. Sorry, dissatisfaction with globalization and economic integration. That's talking about Brexit and Donald Trump's election. It says that Mr. Trump's election has raised questions about whether the U.S. will continue to extend the unconditional security guarantee that has underpinned European prosperity since World War II. Now, Richard Palmer talked about this on Trumpet Hour Friday. I mean, this is the way it's been since the end of the Second World War. And now you see Europe being jolted. Every other month, it seems like. You think this will help to strengthen the Union? And to get them to finally come together to pool their arms production? To build up a military? To defend themselves? Look at how many of these commentators are just pouring forth with how dramatic the impact will be. And so many of them are just hitting the nail right on the head. Project Syndicate, it says, with Trump in the White House, the U.S. will become obsessed with itself. It's safe to say that the transatlantic trade and investment partnership between the U.S. and European Union is now a non-starter. But a Trump presidency will adversely affect Europe in more ways than trade. The EU's territorial integrity itself is now at stake. Trump has made it abundantly clear that his foreign policy priorities do not include European security. You are on your own, he has said. He's made that abundantly clear. He doesn't recognize NATO's strategic necessity, and he's shown an interest, this is the Project Syndicate, he's shown an interest in transatlantic relations only when he has alluded to unpaid bills. They're not paying their way. And so why should we pay? Why should we be involved? Project Syndicate says a Trump presidency will lead to an epic geopolitical shift. For the first time since 1941, Europe cannot rely on the U.S. defense umbrella. It now stands alone. And like the New York Times says, hasn't that always been a delicate matter? When Europe stands alone, with Germany as the de facto leader? People better wake up to what's happening. Forget about Bible prophecy for a moment. Just look into your history books. Look into what happened 70, 75 years ago. What happened on that continent, the continent of Europe, when Germany was the dominant leader militarily? That's history. And now we're looking at a dramatic shift, an epic geopolitical shift. Europe's not going to be able to rely upon that U.S. defense umbrella anymore. And so you thought these prophecies were accelerating under the reign of President Obama. Wow. Look at some of these articles that have been rolling out of Europe and the United States just in the last week. Well, this Project Syndicate piece goes on and talks about how that for the last 70 years or so, Europe's been quite happy to let the United States do all the heavy lifting, to provide all the protection and the leadership. And it says here, the more active the United States has been, the more Europe has dozed off. And every once in a while, their leaders will step forward and give lectures on the United States overreaching. Or if there's not enough action, scolding the United States for being more of a leader or taking the lead. But that era is now over, Project Syndicate says. It says here, Trump knows that the EU has the money, technology, and know-how to be the global power equal to the U.S. And it's not his problem that Europe lacks the political will to harness its full potential. We Europeans have assumed for too long that it's cheaper and safer to let the U.S. solve our problems, even in our own backyard. With Trump's election, and given America's checkered foreign policy legacy, we must discard this belief. We've got to change our thinking, they're all saying. We better wake up. We better wake up and take charge of our own destiny. Project Syndicate says the EU can no longer wait to build its own European defense community and develop its own security strategy. The EU must become independently capable of ensuring its own security. Anything less will be insufficient to secure its territory. This is a difficult but vital decision that the EU has postponed for too long. Now that Trump has been elected, it can wait no longer. Yes, indeed. The way that Europe sees it, we're in a time of no more delay. We can't pay lip service to it anymore. We've got to act. And if Brexit didn't jolt you enough, they're saying, well, now look at what Trump is saying. Look at the Trump foreign policy. Look at the priorities, or the lack of priorities, when it comes to Europe. Well, where is all of this leading? Richard Palmer referred to an article my father wrote 2 years ago about the coming split between the United States and Germany. And there he was just talking about the spy scandal, how that was bringing this on. And now what about a Trump presidency? Let me read to you what my father said 2 years ago. This is at thetrumpet.com. Just 2 years ago, he said, the age of American global leadership is drawing to a close. It's drawing to a close. I mean, look at what was happening during the administration of Barack Obama. The withdrawals, the retreat, the lack of leadership, leading from behind. And now you have the populist leader saying, look, we're gonna put America first, and shame on the previous presidents for all of those unnecessary wars that cost us trillions of dollars that should have been spent at home on our railroad system, or on the bridges or roads or airports, the infrastructure. And so here comes another leader, just like the one 8 years ago, a $1 trillion infrastructure package that's supposed to fix everything. And now here we are again. You're hearing the same talk. What we need is a $1 trillion infrastructure package. 8 years on, as America becomes more and more inward. It's unbelievable how fast these things are unfolding. My father writes, this is 2 years ago, while the Germans might not come out and say so, they're reveling in that fact. The fact that America's global leadership is drawing to a close. Yes, there's a lot of people in Europe. They won't say it. They won't say it in Germany, but they're excited at the prospect of this. You can feel it in these articles by just the commentators. They want Europe to take the lead. They want Germany to dominate the continent. Says the U.S. may try and repair relations with its former lover, but irreversible damage has already been done. The breakup, this is my father writing 2 years ago, the breakup is going to continue to worsen until one of America's greatest allies since World War II becomes once again, this is history repeating itself, until one of America's greatest allies since World War II, the end of it, becomes once again its greatest enemy. Yes, indeed. That's where this is headed. History teaches you this. Bible prophecy teaches you this as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. World War III is closer than you think. Terrorism and economic crisis is tearing Europe apart. The only nation that can lead Europe out of the mess is Germany. But Germany can't do it without a strong leader.
Bible prophecy says they will get one. He will unite Europe in a new Holy Roman Empire. But it won't stop there. Every time Europe unites, war breaks out. Find out how it will happen again, one last time. Request a free copy of The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. What will the Holy Roman Empire do after it has stopped terrorism and saved Europe's economy? This book will tell you. You'll be shocked at how much it will affect your future. Act today.
To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
So you think the election of Barack Obama 8 years ago, do you think that sped up the fulfillment of numerous Bible prophecies? It sure did. It sure did. But now look at where we are today. Look at any region in the world today. This kind of jumped out at me as I was listening to Trumpet Hour Friday. That any region you look at, Russia and China, the kings of the East, as they're called in Bible prophecy, does the election of Donald Trump, does that speed up the fulfillment of prophecy regarding the kings of the East, the emergence of these powers in Asia? Well, they're celebrating the fact that they have a freer reign. They're celebrating the fact that Donald Trump, as one of those articles brought out earlier, hasn't had really one negative thing to say about Putin. Putin can have the Middle East. He can take charge in Syria. Why should we go and get involved in an unnecessary war? Now, we will crush ISIS, but we're not going to get entangled in those foreign wars anymore. So goes the thinking. And Russia and China will look to expand because of this. And those neighbors in the South China Sea, in Ukraine, the Baltic states, they are in a full-fledged panic. What about in Europe, as I talked about in the last segment? What about that smaller yet stronger union that we know will develop in the heart of Europe? What about the split with Germany? America's split with Germany. Germany taking the lead in Europe. The fact that plans are now in full motion for Europe to take care of its own security, to form a European army. They've been paying a lot of lip service to this over the last several years. But now what? It's going to take off. And you look at, again, just these last 5 months. I mean, you talk about the United States and Britain being marginalized from the rest of the world and from Europe in particular. Brexit on the outside looking in, and then now this America First foreign policy from a Donald Trump administration. All of a sudden, the United States and Britain, I mean, they really are on an island, aren't they? And then there's the Middle East. Well, Donald Trump did reach out to Israel, and Carolyn Glick and some of the commentators in Israel, and certainly some of the leaders in Israel, I think Benjamin Netanyahu in particular, they're excited at the prospect of a Trump administration. They're relieved at the thought of Obama finally moving on. But really, will Trump's America First policy, is that really going to bolster Israel's position in the Middle East? We know what prophecy says, Hosea 5:13, Israel's going to go to Germany. There's not going to be any help coming from the United States. Even if Donald Trump pays lip service to it, strengthening that U.S.-Israeli relationship, what is the reality? Well, just look at the damage from the last 8 years. and project ahead a year or two into a Trump administration as everything begins to break down in the United States. And yes, that too is coming. You say, well, I mean, if anything, Donald Trump's presidency will maybe slow things down as far as the deterioration goes in the United States, because after all, he's going to make America great again. Well, what does your Bible say? God says the pride of America's power has been broken. God says we're going bankrupt. God says our cities are going to burn with fire. God says we're going to be bitterly divided at home. It's not going to make America stronger. I mean, look, I'm an American, and it's nice to hear some optimistic words about America and about its future. I mean, it is coming. American greatness. It's coming again. Just like my father brings out in Great Again, his booklet. But it's not going to be brought on by a president or an administration. It's going to be brought on by the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Before that, all of these prophecies. Is a Trump administration really going to benefit Israel? What about Iran? What if Donald Trump says, look, we don't have to honor that Iran nuke deal that President Obama signed? Well, okay, but do you think America's going to be in a position to reimpose sanctions? Do you think America's going to be able to get Russia and China on board with ever reimposing the sanctions or snapping them back, as President Obama said that he would if they violated the agreement? It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. America's going to be preoccupied with its own problems at home, or with building up the infrastructure. Everywhere you look in this world, it's easy to see. It should be. It's easy to see how Donald Trump's victory last week will dramatically accelerate Bible prophecy. My father writes in Great Again, his new booklet, Jeremiah 30 prophesies about God bringing the great tribulation on, or bringing it on end time Israel, which prophetically refers to modern day America, Britain, and its Commonwealth nations. He says the Bible shows that this will all happen quickly. Quickly. And we're getting so close to this time. The seventh resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire is about to burst on the world scene. That's in the new booklet. He stresses there just how fast it's all going to unfold. Over the weekend, by the way, I read this booklet, this new booklet by my father, Great Again. And it makes for a pretty fascinating study, particularly following what happened in the United States last week. I mean, you see the disaster of these past 8 years. You see America under attack from every direction, particularly the radical left, the communist infiltration, reaching out and propping up America's enemies, snubbing the allies, retreating from the world stage, stirring up strife and division at home. Racial division in particular. And then along comes the populist. Well, I'll make America great again. I'll fix these problems. But as my father brings out in the booklet, Great Again, it's not going to be fixed by a politician. These problems come as a result of our sins as a people. And my father says no political candidate is going to make America great again. He said, I'd like to see it happen, but it isn't going to happen in this age. Everyone will come to recognize that truth before much longer. God will make America great again in the world tomorrow. God's going to be the one who makes it great again. Not any political candidate. This was what my father was writing in that booklet, which, by the way, he completed a couple of months ago. This was before the election, before the results of the election, and now you go back and read it, given what happened last week. It's a sobering study. It really is. Before God makes America great again, there's lots and lots of prophecies we're going to have to wrap our minds around. Like in Ezekiel 33, where it says that this is about the death of nations. The death of nations. Ezekiel 5 says God is against us. Ezekiel 7 talks about the land being full of bloody crimes. God's talking about our nations. God's talking about our sins. And that's why my father says, the leader certainly has a role to play, whether it's the current president or the one to come. But as for the problems we're facing, America has to look at itself. God blames the people. God blames the people. America's problems, my father says, are a direct result of America's sins. And so it's not going to be fixed by any populist movement or political party or president of the United States, no matter what people might think. Sure, we'd love to see it happen, but it's not going to happen in this age. God's the one who will make America great again in the world tomorrow. When we come back, we'll roll through a few of the clips from Donald Trump's interview on 60 Minutes last night in the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
On Friday's show last week, we talked about the meeting that President Obama had with President-elect Trump on Thursday, and I just noted how that they came out of that meeting and had nothing but positive things to say about each other, and how strange that was, given the animosity that clearly is there between the two. But Donald Trump was obviously impressed with President Obama on the interview he had last night. This is on 60 Minutes, his interview with Leslie Stahl. Here's what Donald Trump had to say about that meeting with President Obama, clip one.
I found him to be terrific. I found him to be very smart and very nice, great sense of humor. As much as you can have a sense of humor talking about tough subjects, but we were talking about some pretty tough subjects.
That's Donald Trump on his 60 Minutes interview last night, and as we covered on Friday's program, he coming out of that said that I'm going to seek counsel from this administration, get his help, but it was just a delightful experience, a terrific meeting that was supposed to only be for 15 minutes, and yet it went on for an hour and a half. And as I said last week, I mean, this may be an indication in itself that President-elect Trump is already backing away from some of the strong rhetoric from the campaign over the last year and a half, and we'll find out soon enough just how liberal some of his policies will be or how conservative they might be. It probably will be a mixed bag, I suppose. But clearly, he's walking back some of his strongest positions. He came away from that meeting on Thursday. He mentioned, I think this was an interview with Wall Street Journal on Friday, that there were some elements of the Affordable Care Act that he would work to preserve. I won't play the clip from last night on that subject, but Leslie Stahl got into that subject with him as well. Here's what she had to say or ask him about the wall that he intends to build. This is clip two.
Are you really going to build a wall?
Yes.
They're talking about a fence in the Republican Congress.
Sure.
Would you accept a fence?
For certain areas, I would, but certain areas, the wall is more appropriate. I'm very good at this. It's called construction. But
so part wall, part fence?
Yeah, there could be some fencing.
Some fencing along with the wall. Of course, all during the campaign season, you'll remember the big, beautiful wall that he talked about and how that if there was any blowback from Mexico, the wall would just get bigger and bigger. And now, along with the thinking of some Republicans in Congress, it's a part wall and a part fence. Again, a small step, perhaps, but nevertheless, a step backward from what he was saying in the lead up to the election last week. Also, he had some really strong statements to say about Hillary Clinton and that if he's in charge, she would be prosecuted. This is the exchange that he had with Leslie Stahl on that last night. Clip three.
Are you going to ask for a special prosecutor to investigate Hillary Clinton over her emails? And are you, as you had said to her face, going to try and put her in jail?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to think about it. I feel that I want to focus on jobs. I want to focus on health care. I want to focus on the border and immigration and doing a really great immigration bill. We want to have a great immigration bill. And I want to focus on all of these other things that we've been talking about.
You
get the country straightened away.
You called her crooked. Hillary said you wanted to get in jail. Your people in your audience has kept saying lock him up.
Yeah.
Well,
she did some bad things.
I mean, she did some bad things. A special prosecutor?
I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to hurt them. They're good people. I don't want to hurt them.
So that's a pretty significant step back from what he had been saying all along, that she's going to be prosecuted, she's going to jail. Now it's a little bit of a different tune. I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to hurt them in any way. They're good people. That's what he's talking about with respect to the special prosecutor regarding Hillary Clinton's email scandal, the Clinton Foundation, and so on. This next clip, they get into the demonstrations and even rioting that followed Trump's election last week. This is clip five.
When they demonstrate against you and there are signs out there, I mean, don't you say to yourself, I guess you don't, you know, do I have to worry about this? Do I have to go out and assuage them? Do I have to tell them not to be afraid? They're afraid.
I would tell them don't be afraid. Absolutely.
But that's not what you're saying. I said it.
Oh, I think, no, I think I'm saying it. I've been saying it.
Okay.
Don't be afraid. We are going to bring our country back, but certainly don't be afraid. You know, we just had an election, and sort of like you have to be given a little time. I mean, people are protesting. If Hillary had won, and if my people went out and protested, everybody would say, oh, that's a terrible thing. And it would have been a much different attitude. There is a different attitude. You know, there's a double standard here.
And he's totally right about that. You can only imagine that if Hillary won and Donald Trump supporters hit the streets, they'd be screaming in the media how terrible this is, how racist this is. The election, people spoke, and you've got to accept the results. Now, I mean, it's totally different. Now, I mean, you're justifying riotous behavior. That's what it amounts to. We got into that last week. so I don't need to dwell on it too much again. Let me just get to the final clip here. This one really is pretty. It's fascinating when you think about what happened, given all of the complaints throughout the campaign season. This is clip four.
Now, for months, you were running around saying that the system is rigged. The whole thing was rigged. You tweeted once that the Electoral College is a disaster for democracy.
I do.
So do you still think it's rigged?
Well, I think the Electoral College... Look, I won with the Electoral College.
Exactly. But do you think it's rigged?
Yeah, some of the election locations are. Some of the system is.
Even though you won, you're saying that.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to change my mind just because I won. But I would rather see it where you went with simple votes. You know, you get 100 million votes and somebody else gets 90 million votes and you win. There's a reason for doing this because it brings all the states into play, Electoral College, and there's something very good about that. But this is a different system, but I respect it. I do respect the system.
Now, this is amazing to me because in the primary, he made the same charges that it's all rigged, there's no way this is fair. But in the primary, back earlier this year, Donald Trump won 62% of the delegates after getting, I think it was only 37 or 38% of the popular vote. The system benefited him. And then last week, he wins 57% of the Electoral College votes. I mean, it was an overwhelming victory by the Electoral College standards, and yet he only had 47% of the popular vote. In fact, he lost the popular vote election to Hillary Clinton. So if the system is rigged, which it isn't, but if it is, to just go along with the argument, Donald Trump is the one who benefited from it most of all. And going back to what I was saying last week about Romans 13 and Daniel 4, and that, look, the one that's going to end up in that position as leader, it's going to be of God. And I think even the rigged system narrative and the fact that he benefited most, it really does highlight, in my view, that he was the perfect man for the job, the perfect man for all of these prophecies to come together. It's pretty amazing to think about what is ahead. Pick any region, as I say, and see if a Trump administration doesn't accelerate end-time Bible prophecies for that region. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the programs and those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.